Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Good morning, Molly. Happy Thursday. So you did not like Shota Imanaga acknowledging post-game that he did not know one U2 song, but he was wearing the t-shirt anyway?
I'm not sure. I think it's a band. It says U2. So I'm assuming it's a band shirt, but unfortunately, I'm sorry, but I can't name one single song.
I just don't know how you don't know a single U2 song. It's been around a long time.
It didn't grow up around U2. And
but you don't know the guy's nickname? You don't know Bono?
And it was a beautiful day.
It was a beautiful day. He wore the t-shirt.
It was a beautiful day. U2 song.
It's a beautiful day.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
I think it would have been great if Shota would have said, look, I saw Bono one day, and I looked at him, and I said, I could live with or without you.
And I wait without you, with or without you.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Dan Wiederer from the Chicago Tribune, kind enough to sit in for Mr. David this morning. He's having a rare holiday. David with a week off. God bless him. I was laughing yesterday. I saw them on the Chicago Lead, kind of in shock that he wasn't there.
It's good for him. He deserves some time off.
Oh, my God. David works like a dog. It's good to see him enjoy himself a little bit. I got a vacation coming up down the line. I'm going to the old sod eventually for a family reunion thing. So, I mean, I know how great that is. And it's good stuff to just get away, clear your head.
Yeah.
Have you been enjoying your off season, or are you going 100 miles an hour no matter what?
And yeah, it's a combination. Youth baseball's got its claws in me right now, and we were in Cooperstown 2 weeks ago with the 12U team. Fantastic trip. That if that qualifies as a vacation, that was my summer vacation. I didn't think I relaxed at all. I got home. I told my wife, I said, that was kind of like Disney World, where it's like you have a lot of fun, but you come home and you need another vacation.
There was a story about a woman that attacked the stewardess coming out of Orlando. It was like that exact, you know, when you go to Disneyland with a bunch of kids, you're like finished. It's the most exhausting thing ever.
Yeah, we were in Orlando last year for spring break, and that was it was a ton of fun. But again, you're just like, you got back and you're just like, man, I am exhausted.
Yeah,
I've got nothing left in the tank. And
around.
Very similar as Cooperstown is kind of like Disneyland for 12-year-old baseball players.
I love it. Who's their favorite player? There's always this shifting allegiance, not locally, but just who are all the kids attracted to?
Well, right now, my son's got PCA fever.
Yeah,
and it's just, I think it's, you know, he's a fast kid himself, and I think that the speed really, really gets him, and he watches him make run plays all around the outfield. You know, there's a lot of Shohei for a while.
And
those guys are really into that. And it's interesting to kind of watch them evolve and the teams change. Like, my son really liked Rizzo when he was young. And now, like, I don't think he has, like, very vivid memories of Rizzo on the Cubs anymore, which is crazy, right?
Yeah, that's how it goes. And I always find it fascinating. Like, when the Cubs when they were at the Little League World Series, they played an exhibition at the Hall of Fame, and all these kids were there. And it was cool to see them just run at Javier Baez. El Mago was the guy that everybody kind of wanted to be, and everybody saw his stuff. And we've talked a lot about this idea that PCA feeds off the crowd and feeds the crowd in the way that Javier Baez did when he was here. So to hear you say that makes perfect sense to me. He just has the kind of personality and the kind of talent that would appeal to any kid watching the game.
It's a great comp because there's just obvious passion that comes out when he plays. And then the highlights are just like they're mind-blowing at times.
The
catch the other night, how did you get that? You know, I went to two games of the White Sox series in May, and there was a catch up against the wall and center where you just like, he made it so smooth and so fluid, and it was just a ridiculously difficult catch. And so that's there. I remember writing a story about Javi during the you know, it was probably 2018 with the Cubs, and just remembering the flair that he had every day that he was out there, and just the things he did that whole season were like, oh yeah, let's turn on YouTube and relive that over and over and over again.
It's nice to see him get this kind of Indian summer to his career. You know, obviously, they traded him to the Mets for PCA, mm-hmm. and now the two of them are going to meet on opposite sides of the All-Star game. They're both center fielders for the game. At least that was the position he was chosen. Javi plays all over, but it's just good to see him kind of have this comeback year. Had he not had his contract, I don't think he'd still be in Detroit. I mean, it's working out now, but he went through a couple rough years there.
He did. And I run this by you because I feel like we talk about PCA fever, and it's really easy to get caught up into it. And I think that there's almost been this assumption in Chicago that this is going to last for 7 or 8 years. And you're like, well, remember when Javi was a legitimate MVP candidate, and then all of a sudden he wasn't, and obviously we know Chris Bryant, and so I think like the PCA story is you know, it's really, really fascinating right now, but there's a lot of chapters left to go before you sort of rubber stamp him as a long-term absolute, you know, can't miss superstar.
Well, I mean, I can remember having conversations about Chris Bryant on a Hall of Fame track,
right?
Like, they brought up a Hall of Fame player because he was Rookie of the Year, he was an MVP, they win a World Series for the first time in forever. I mean, his accomplishments were crazy.
Yeah.
And his possibilities were endless. And now it's like he's in witness protection.
It's crazy.
It's just, you never hear a word about him. He's always kind of hurt. He's up in the thin air, and another guy that locked into a deal and hasn't played.
It's sad, right?
It's
and it's a reminder about how freaking hard the sport is, and then just sustaining success at that level is not easy to do, and that's the great challenge for all these guys. But yeah, it's a fun baseball year for sure.
I saw that PCA went to a meeting. There was like a meeting of the people, the workers at the actual stadium, you know, the security people and the ushers and stuff. And he showed up at their meeting and told them, like, hey, it's been so hot, and we appreciate everything you guys do. Like, that's world class stuff.
And it's genuine. You can tell that.
That's unbelievable.
We went to Cubs convention in, I guess it would have been January of 2024, and I didn't realize the charisma he had and how natural it was, and how easy he was in gliding between different sets of people and just carrying on conversation and being funny and being genuine with the way he carries himself.
Yeah, he was great. They interviewed him before the game on ESPN. Nationally televised game, and he was there with Seiya Suzuki.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was a funny little exchange. Seiya, it was I've been saying this, and I know that no one wants to hear it, but when you got a guy like Shota Imanaga, who is just all personality, and he's kind of joking around, and he's singing the song, and from the minute he was introduced, he's like this dynamic personality. And Seiya always seemed just sort of closed off and just different.
Reserved,
very reserved and not like fun-loving. And to see him joking around with Pete Crow Armstrong, it's almost like you felt, wow, you know, that is super cool that he even has those kind of exchanges, and he's offering to babysit his kids, and until he gets the big contract, you know, we can help him with some money. It was hilarious. I thought the whole exchange was like charming, and you just don't see that. You see it from PCA because he's everywhere, but you don't see it from, say, a Suzuki.
Charming's a good adjective, and it's just good vibes, right?
That's the
one thing about this Cubs team that I think has people really excited is there's been good vibes. They've weathered some storms, but the vibes have been pretty consistent from the start of the year, and you hope that turns into something.
I was really hoping that Seiya would make the All-Star team because of the way that he has handled, and I got to be careful about how I say it, but I believe it is a demotion. Hmm. He was a right fielder who wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know they got a guy that is on a Hall of Fame track to replace him, but he was replaced and moved to DH. And I don't know how those conversations went, But it's certainly, there's no Raphael Devers situation where the guy has left his team and gone somewhere else. I mean, it's crazy, but he handled it, I thought, with great aplomb.
Producing now too, which is amazing. God. And to have 25 home runs, to be leading the league in RBIs.
75 RBIs. Is it 77 now? He's got so many RBIs.
Just keeps going.
Yeah, and he's got a lot of time before he got six more games.
Yeah.
Before the All-Star games, before the break, to see how many he can get. So I hope he goes on a real roll. They're also going up to Minnesota. Mm-hmm. That is not a fun place. I know you've had fun there. The White Sox have never had fun there. I actually went to a series one time up there just for snorts and giggles and just watched them lose in that dome. It was horrible. I love going up there for Bear games, but I'm also the guy that's got his head down who is screaming out the score Viking. I love that song. I could sing that song for a living. There's something about that song that really appeals to me. But it's loud in that building, and it's not always the greatest results as well.
It's funny that you talk about baseball inside a dome. The only true dome game that I ever saw was in the first year the Tropicana Field was open in Tampa. Mm. And I was as somebody who grew up going to Wrigley all the time, you're like, what is this in here? There was nobody there. It was just this stale. Everything was really just bad. And so I never saw the Twins play at the Metrodome. Did see him at Target Field, but I can't imagine how bad that atmosphere was at times.
I covered a Bulls preseason game in Tropicana Field, believe it or not. They played down there, and Jerry Krause came over to tell the media that this was a gift from Jerry Reinsdorf, that he brought Michael Jordan to the people of Tampa, because they had built this beautiful stadium for Jerry.
Right.
So he could
bring the
get
White
his
Sox.
Stadium. I mean, and you're like looking at it like, oh, is that it? You know, it was crazy.
What a gift.
But it was just crazy. But it's not a good building.
Yeah.
And now the roof's torn off.
Yeah, now they got nothing.
And now that team is playing at the, I've been to that Steinbrenner Stadium, whatever the hell it's called, because that's where you parked at one point to go to the Bucks games. And it's so strange that they're playing there and doing well.
Right.
As the Yankees have fallen off, I know that, we're watching Toronto. What was that? Their ninth straight victory. The White Sox went to Toronto and won a series for the first time in forever. That seemed to wake them up. And that seemed to somehow curse the damn Yankees. And they just have lost games. I believe the Yankees were up three in the division. Now they're down seven.
Wow.
Is that what it is?
Is it seven?
It's crazy.
Now?
It's crazy. But Tampa is also kind of in the mix again. Like, how is that humanly possible?
It took me a while in April to, you'd be watching the highlights, you're like, where is this game at? And then you're like, it's at Steinbrenner Field, and that's what they're doing now.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's weird. It's jarring.
Yeah, it's really strange. And I mean, what's wild is you got two baseball teams playing in minor league stadiums, right? Because the A's are wherever they are, out in Sacramento, waiting to have their big trip to Vegas.
Yeah.
And they're going to play there for 3 years?
Yeah.
That's rough.
Speaking of big trips to Vegas, you going to come out when the Bears play out there this fall? Maybe convince the show to come on out for a really, really early morning?
Yeah. Well, I'd be delighted. We've got some friends in the desert.
Okay.
It'd be fun to go.
Bears Monday.
And enjoy ourselves. Yeah, that'd be great. You'd have to kind of, I think with our schedule, you'd have to, there'd be no way unless you took a red eye home, you'd have to kind of do the show on Monday and then come home.
I'll workshop it for you if you want.
I got to do the pre and post with the Bears
That's true. You got a lot on your plate.
You got to get Pat Nolan out there just to make it all happen.
I'm sure they wouldn't resist. Pat's on an entire year bender right now, my understanding. He turned 50 years old, and now he's just going everywhere to play golf.
He's a great golfer, and he's what's awesome? I am not. My name is Mulligan, but I am not a very good golfer and never have been. I took a golf lesson one time. I think we were in North Carolina, And I was staying on this golf course place. It was wonderful. So I took a lesson. I was gifted a lesson. And the guy is like, he's kind of looking me over and he's like, yeah, you got some size. I need you to hit a rail car full of golf balls and you could be a hell of a player. And I looked at the guy and I'm like, good mother of God, like how many golf balls would fit into that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Some freight train goes by and I'm just whacking. Every time I see a freight train, I think of the guy saying that. No, not a golfer, not a very good one anyway. And it's a pity because you do make a lot of connections, have a lot of fun conversations. Yeah. You meet people and you can learn a lot. Just, I went to a couple of those Bears outings with the alumni.
Man, yeah.
Some of the stories were unbelievable.
Yeah. I wish I could get better at golf, but it is the one place that I go and I feel like I can detach and be like fully present. Stick the phone in the bag, turn it off for a few hours and just lock in and be there, which is a good thing.
That's mentally a good exercise. It's also difficult when you got all the stuff going on in your life to take.
It's a lot of time. It's a big time commitment.
Yeah. Especially when you just get a little bit frustrated by different shots.
You and I are probably very similar with our frustration levels and the way we express them.
I actually have two putters in my bag.
Okay.
Because I will bench one of them if it's not getting the job done. You get in that bag and stay there. I'm taking the other one out.
This is a great
puts a shock through it.
This is a great transition. Yeah. I played golf in high school. For one season, carried two putters in my bag. And my high school golf coach was furious with me. He said, Wiederer, anyone who carries two putters is confused. You need to get rid of one of those putters and pick one. Ron Ross. Shout out to the great Ron Ross at Main South High School for that life lesson.
That's awesome. Did you? Why did you have them both? Same idea. Bench one.
Because I'm a head case. Yeah. I'm a total head case. I would hit driver off the fairway and try to make every miracle shot. And he hated that. And the other piece of advice that's lived with me to this day, he said, once you realize that a round of half pars, half bogeys is better than anything you've ever shot, you're going to be fine. You know, stop trying to make 17 birdies on a golf course. Half pars, half bogeys, you shoot 81 and get out of there happy.
That's great stuff. It's great to have someone that can teach you to golf that has patience because that's what it takes. I had an old roommate. The guy was a scratch golfer. And I would go out with him. We would go to like public courses and you would like they'd have like little pieces of like plastic grass and you would, you know, you tee off on that stuff, but he would teach the game to me and he would talk me through different shots. It was really fun. I learned so much. The other thing with him, he was obsessed with the rules of golf. So he you would say, hey, what did you hit there? And he'd be like, well, if I tell you, that's one stroke against me. But you asking, that's two strokes against you. Like that's all he did was quote the rules of golf, which were hilarious. They're so crazy.
That's how my father was. He was big into the rules of golf. And you're like, dude, we're not playing for anything.
I know, it's like, I love
you
that,
don't
though.
Have to hit your ball so out of that terrible lie in a divot in the fairway, whatever it is.
I think that is a really admirable. I loved my buddy Elko. He would literally quote the rules of golf, and he'd be and if he watched a tournament, he'd be like, well, you know, and he'd have the rules of golf.
There you go.
And I mean,
he's probably one of the ones that calls in during the tournament.
And they do, and they catch him at everything. And I love that. Because I kind of have that kind of OCD about different things, you know? It's like if you get it, you read it, you read the rules, and you remember them, and then you really can have fun with them.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
And they're so obscure. It is wonderful. I love that. I love that your dad was into that. It just really appeals to my
I taught him
nature.
To golf, believe that or not.
Really?
So he had played when he was like in his 20s and hated it and threw his clubs away. And then I got into it and he agreed to come out. And so essentially it was me teaching him. He didn't have much patience. God rest his soul. And we spent so much time on the golf course together. I think he was probably in his 40s when I was giving them pointers.
That is fantastic. What a great thing to do with your old man. Yeah, my dad, he was like, he was a different cat. He played professional soccer in England when he was younger, and then he came to America. He was a really good player, but the three of us, we played a lot of soccer, probably because he played with us a little bit, but we were three completely different players,
okay,
which I felt you know, we should have been the same type of player. The idea that we were different means he didn't work nearly hard enough to help us with our game. You see what I'm saying?
What was the scouting report on you?
Well, I was a pretty big player, and I learned at a young age to keep my hands down, because I think when you're, you know, if you watch good dribblers, you're moving people as you're moving through the field, and people don't notice it. But, you know, there's a lot of action and a lot of physical stuff you can do. I was taught, when you go up for a head ball, bring your hands behind your ears.
Okay.
And you go through the guy in front of you with your elbows.
Okay. Okay.
And then that clears him out, and you get a free header. And like, the official will not call that because you are back here. And it looks like you didn't touch him.
It's like Hail Mary defense,
reality,
right?
Yeah. You know, you've gone right through the
guy. Yeah, yeah, there you go.
Like, you know,
with sharp, pointy elbows.
Exactly, yeah. It's pretty bad. Yeah, it's not good. Who is it? Cliff Levingston played for the Bulls.
Yeah.
He gave me an elbow one time. I had a bruise for 2 weeks.
Why? Why did he elbow you?
No, we were talking about rebounding.
Okay.
And I was doing a story on just that, you know, different elements of the game, and then he was like, well, you know, and then he's showing me this. It was pretty cool, because you learned a lot of stories, a lot of different things, like Charles Oakley, right? They called him Oak Tree. He would, when he was rebounding, he would put an arm on top of someone's shoulder.
Okay.
And Horace Grant was telling me that he would put it on you. You couldn't jump.
Yeah.
Like, and if you did, you were off balance. And he had like a tree
limb that he would
put on you. And that really was a smart, and he kind of picked up on that and tried to do it to other people. But then he had to really spend some time in the weight room to build up his body so that he could rebound better.
Yeah.
I think it's really fun, those kind of things. But Cliff was showing me about, you know, elbows, whatever. But when I think about it now, he poked me. He just shot one into my ribs, you know, just,
yeah.
And I mean,
it bruised ribs for a week.
Holy Christ, I thought I had broken something. My mid-body was just like a human bruise. It was just
There's
awful.
Nothing worse than bruised ribs either. It's like hard to breathe if you've got a legitimate bruised ribs.
It's tough. It's really, you get some awful injuries with stuff like that. All right, listen, we got all the big stories of the day. We're going to break down everything that happened overnight, what's coming in the future, and we'll do that next with the pick six. We got Dan Weeder in this morning. We're going to take advantage of that, talk some football with him along the way. We got a big show planned, and we will be back with the pick six. It's Mully and Haw with Dan Weeder on the Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
What do you make of Michael Busch earning NL Co-Player of the Week honors? He's sharing it with Phillies ace Zach Wheeler. Is that all you get for going 9-for-12 over the holiday weekend with four homers, half an award? Or should Cubs fans be happy he's being honored after an all-star snub?
Half an award is pretty good. I would be delighted to see a guy get half an award. It just means that they had a hard time choosing between them, and they both were excellent. Zach Wheeler had a couple of starts and did very well. That guy is in this Cy Young competition, for God's sake. He's really good. It's a pity he didn't go to the White Sox when they tried to get him low those many years ago. I think Michael Busch, I'm not sure that he's the guy that was snubbed. You know, I get it. He could be at the All-Star game, and I think that you could make a case for him. And if someone dropped out and you needed a first baseman, he might be the guy you call. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I thought Seiya got snubbed more than Michael Busch. I thought even Carson Kelly probably got snubbed more than Michael Busch. And that's not – I think Michael Busch is having a great year, and certainly he's on a tear. And maybe if this tear had happened like 3 weeks ago, that would have influenced voting. Who knows? but I think he's doing great. I think you love to see it. And I don't think there's anything wrong with sharing an award. I think it was, there's no problem for me.
I'm going to pass this question to Tyler. He's a huge Cubs fan, and this is his last day before Dustin comes, so I want him to get some Cubs love here.
Look,
so Tyler,
you.
Go ahead and take away.
Oh, I appreciate that, Brandon. Well, I mean, I was going to say, why not give Michael Busch the whole award, but did you see what Zach Wheeler did last week in his two starts?
Crazy. Yeah.
Monday against the Padres, 8 innings, 6 hits, 10 strikeouts, no runs. And then Sunday against the Cincinnati Reds, complete game, 9 innings, 1 hit, 1 run, 12 strikeouts. As awesome of a week, a weekend as Michael Busch had.
Yep.
Two phenomenal starts by Zach Wheeler. So I don't have a problem with the two sharing the award. And I actually do agree with you, Molly. Michael Busch has had a fantastic season. I don't get why Craig Counsell doesn't play him at first base almost every game other than Justin Turner.
Yeah.
But Seiya Suzuki, how are you not in the All-Star game leading the MLB in RBIs with 76? Carson Kelly's had a great season so far. First half, fantastic. Kind of tailed off second half. Yep. I'm going to say Busch was the second snub, but I do agree in this instance. I'm fine with him sharing the award with Zach Wheeler. I do think Seiya Suzuki 1,000% should be in the All-Star game.
First of all, how about Brandon sharing the mic with Tyler there? That's a nice piece of generosity. Team first pass guy there.
Something I'd never do. Baby T, no offense.
The question,
none taken.
The question asked if Cubs fans should be happy that Michael Busch is being honored. They should be happy that he's producing. 9 for 12 with 4 homers over the weekend, and you see him with Taylor McGregor after hitting the 3 home runs on the 4th of July and saying his brother sent him a text that said, how much do you love America? You know, just kind of kept hitting fireworks out of the park on the 4th of July. Look, like the All-Star game conversation is always fascinating for about 4 or 5 days at this time of year. But when you are the Cubs having the year they're having, this is about October. And to see Michael Busch on the trajectory he's on this year, you should be thrilled that he's putting together these types of weekends, these types of months, and hopefully he can continue that production for the long haul this season.
The most asked question should be.
That is the voice of Steve Stone. He'll be joining us at 9 o'clock. Are you excited to learn that White Sox center fielder Luis Robert Jr. is close to returning from a hamstring injury later this week if he has no setbacks? Is this the final trade push? Could a low supply of talent push Robert to Philadelphia or San Francisco despite his subpar season? With Ryan Noda placed on the 10-day IL with a right quad strain and Tristan Gray coming up from AAA, what is the corresponding move when Robert returns?
The Luis Robert saga is so hard to wrap your brains around. There's so much disappointment. It's sad in some ways that the production hasn't been there, that the durability hasn't been there. And so it's hard to ever get excited about a return because you don't know when the next exit is going to be as well. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens with him. I can understand why teams elsewhere in the league would be intrigued to maybe try to unlock something that hasn't been unlocked yet. He's only 27. You've got a guy that can still be a defensive plus for you. Obviously hits left-handed pitching really well. You want to try to market that, I think, if you're the White Sox, and try to figure out, obviously they missed the boat on getting the full market value that could have been there at one point. But you got an opportunity now to see what's left there in the tank. It's going to be really interesting to see where that goes and what kind of the ripple effects are for the White Sox.
Am I excited, as Stone would say?
No.
Because
no.
And, like, I think he has more value, really, at this point, staying on this team and trying to get next year. Like, I mean, if he can do something really great, but right. I think that value is at an all-time low. You're not going to get much for him.
Right.
I think it's just better to keep him right now, see what he can do, try to keep him healthy, keep that value going up, and hopefully he can roll over into next season and then probably maybe get something for him maybe in the offseason, or if not, then try to trade him again in the trade deadline next year. I just don't see the value in just getting a single-A player. It doesn't help you. Him adding value to this team now, I mean, it really does nothing. Maybe Vinny Capra, like maybe he can go. I know you're tired of him, Mully. Oh. And maybe he can go down, and that would be the corresponding move overall. But no, I'm not excited.
Yeah. Look, you just said something there that is really important to remember. which is that this, you're trading him now at his absolute rock bottom value. And you got to know that going into it. However, are you saying, Brandon, you pick up the $20 million for next year?
I would at this point. Okay. I mean, just because if you trade him, then you're just getting a single A player
would Jerry,
or something. See, that's the question right there.
Yeah. I don't think they're picking up the $20 million. So I think that this is a big push to try to get him back to trade him. And I think that this is a guy who was an all-star himself a couple of years ago. And you thought, look at this guy. Look at, you know, five-tool player. Look at everything he can do. You know, Mike Trout's aging out here. Luis Robert is soon to be an MVP candidate. You really thought he was on a trajectory like that. But unfortunately, like every White Sox player of his generation, they all just faded away. They all had all this expectation and this hope, and they all never reached it. So you're blaming the organization for that, or you're blaming the players for that, or whoever you want to blame. It's how you wind up with the worst record in the history of the game. And they're trying to come back from that. I think what they're going to end up doing is including him in a deal to try to get more by having like Adrian Hauser with him or with Tautman or somebody that you include. That's how bad it's gotten. He still plays a great center field, and we know that there are teams that need that in San Francisco. The Giants, definitely one of those teams. Philadelphia has been flirting with this for a while. You won't get the same return. And you're, you know, they were holding out at one point because they wanted two, not just one, two kind of high talent, well thought of prospects. That's not happening. You're not getting two, you're not getting one. And if you trade him at this point, you're going to get some Class A hopeful.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of where you're at, and it's really sad. It is just one of the sadder stories out there.
But hard to wrap your brain around
it. It really is. You said it well. It is hard to wrap your brain around it. Awful.
That is the question of the day.
That's the voice of Bruce Levine, and he'll be joining us at 8 o'clock. How about White Sox general manager Chris Getz saying that Mike Tauchman would be a player teams would want, but he also could be a player the team wants to keep? Classic posturing or sincere thought. Getz also said the amateur draft coming up on Sunday may be creating a lull in the trade market. Is that bad news for the Cubs?
Yeah, that's bad news for the Cubs because they need to make a move. You know, I mean, I'm now of the mind that they need to make an immediate move, and then they need to make a bigger move, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that they need to load up a little bit here, you know, and then you can take your time and go to the deadline if you have to with a bigger move. But they're looking for some help. And, you know, look, they're playing well. And they're going to do well in Minnesota. At least I feel that way going into that series. I feel really good about it. And, in fact, I think that they're going to do well enough that they could turn that team into a seller. I don't know that there's anyone on the roster that I want to buy if I'm the Cubs. But I think that we need clarity with some of these teams. The All-Star break is approaching quickly. We need to know who's in and who's out come trade deadline. Too many teams are still in. They moved the trade deadline, and now it's in the middle of the draft. I mean, that is just awkward. It is awkward because you know, I get it. The general manager, you have a scouting director, you're doing things in unison, but you are somewhat distracted if you are worried about getting kids out of the draft. The White Sox obviously were the worst team in baseball, but they changed the rules. So they pick 10th on Sunday, 10th, and there's supposedly five high school shortstops they could choose from. Okay, that sounds great to me. But it's going to take a while to bring that guy up and move him along in your program. I just look at the White Sox. The good news is they got the number one pick in every other round. You could make some hay. You need to get something done. You need to do well in a draft. And hopefully Mike Shirley is up to it. But I think that It is bad news for the Cub. As far as Tauchman is concerned, I'm going to say this again. This guy's changed the White Sox team. They are so much more dangerous when he is in the lineup. And I would like to break down those numbers because I think they've got significantly more wins. The guy's missed 30 games, right?
Yeah.
So that's a problem. But you trade him. He was signed to a one-year deal. I guess there's an option here. You trade him. It is time for him to go to a team that is going to make a run.
I think the only reason they probably want to, or Getz said, we might keep Tauchman is just to push up the price
exactly.
a little bit. Which, yeah. like I said, that alone is bad news for the Cubs. You know, anytime you're in competition or anything like that, because I think he would be perfect to come back with the Cubs. He's a perfect guy.
He and Adrian Hauser together the Cubs would
be perfect.
Would solve some issues going into
And that's why I think, to me, too, when I'm speaking of the Cubs, too, they need at least, I think I said this before, probably 2 to 3. You could even argue maybe 4 trades overall. Like, I think they need a couple of starters. Maybe they need, like, a guy coming off the bench. Like, that's why I say I think Tauchman would be perfect in that role. And then maybe a third baseman. Just, you don't know about Shaw, really. You know, maybe a third baseman overall. But I don't... Well, the Sox, when it comes to this draft, you know, just the luck comes in there with the 10th pick. But they need to do well in this upcoming draft for the Sox, too. They need a lot more positional players. The pitching they're doing pretty well with, I wouldn't mind more pitching. You can never go wrong with a lot of pitching. They do well with their pitching. So when they draft a pitcher, I feel pretty well with that. When it comes to their positional players, that's when I'm like, okay, we need some development right away. But when it comes, like I said, to go back to Tauchman, though, bad news for the Cubs overall, but I think he would be perfect for them.
Here's what you hear in what Chris Getz said about Mike Tauchman. We really want him, unless you want him, right? Like, and that's kind of what this is at this point. Look, like you've got a guy. I was surprised to learn that he's already 34. You know, it's time sneaks up on you, as we've talked about all morning. He's a guy that obviously gives you a good left-handed bat. Can play the outfield. He's a veteran presence. I could see the benefits for the White Sox and keeping him around for next year, where you've got him for another year, and you can have him as that veteran presence in your locker room. But certainly you're going to dangle the hook out there, see what people are willing to give you, and listen to all offers. With the Cubs, I agree with both of you guys that there seems to be a need for multiple moves. I think you said an immediate move and then a bigger move, right? Which I think is a good way to put it. And it's fascinating to think of the position that they've put themselves in, playing the baseball that they've played through the first few months of the season, to be in a position now to dream the biggest dreams. And,
yes.
and that means dreaming the biggest dreams when it comes to acquiring players. And so this is going to be a fascinating period to see how they put this roster together.
Different question on a different topic.
That is the voice of Mike Florio, and he'll be joining at 8:45. We often talk in the NFL about the third year of a career signaling a breakthrough, sometimes now or never season. For the Bears, those players are Darnell Wright, Jervon Dexter, Tyreek Stevenson, Zach Pickens, Roschon Johnson, Tyler Scott, Noah Sewell, and Terrell Smith. Wright, Dexter, and Stevenson could be starters. Any of the above on the bubble, who is the breakout candidate?
Ah, yes, the draft class of 2023. And now or never is a good way to put it with a lot of these guys. And, and every single one of those guys listed has a big question to answer. I'll start with the bubble. Zach Pickens has to be on the bubble for me. He has the benefit of the front office, which drafted him, still being here. It wasn't a complete regime change in January. And so you have probably a general manager in Ryan Poles who would like to see that through to the fullest possible extent. But when you put new eyes of a new coaching staff in place, they're going to want to see something to believe that you belong in their program. And so Zach Pickens has been largely disappointing. He's been hurt a lot over his first 2 years. He hasn't really produced much on a consistent basis. That's the bubble guy from that list there. As far as a breakout candidate, I'm going to give you Tyreek Stevenson, because I think his skill set, I think his union with both Dennis Allen and Al Harris set him up for a real prove-it season with the defense that the Bears are vowing to play, with more press man coverage, man-to-man coverage overall. And Tyreek Stevenson's got an opportunity here to put the horror of last year behind him. I really do appreciate his mindset. He's got an edge to him. He's obviously bothered by what happened in Washington and everything that followed. But this dude's been through things in life, and I think he's ready to really seize a starting role and then see how much he can do with it. And so that would be my breakout candidate
out of that class. He's got a good position coach now, too.
Yeah, Al Harris is one of the best. Yeah.
I love your answer. Stevenson was my pick, but I'm going to do a little different with that one. I'll get to that. My on-the-bubble candidate for this one is going to be Tyler Scott.
Okay.
I think at this point in the third year, he should have been penciled in as your third wide receiver at best, but right about now. And you see that they already drafted Luther Burden. So now that slot's gone.
And the kid from Washington.
Free agent, and then they signed the guy from Washington. So right now, it feel like he's getting lost in the shuffle right now. So he could be a candidate that's definitely on the bubble if he don't really have a breakout, maybe training camp and preseason on top of that. My breakout candidate, I'm going to go with the likes of Javon Dexter. And the reason why I'm going with Javon Dexter, I think he started off the season last season pretty good. I think his numbers were, like, comparing to, like, Jalen Carter, they were kind of similar at one point. Then he kind of tailed off a little bit. I think he got a little injury here and there. But just hearing him now, like, he's becoming more of a leader. He's bringing guys in. He's like, hey, work out with me. I can see him having that jump. And then now that they got, like, Grady Jarrett there, I think that's going to help him along the way. So I think this is his year to kind of break out and show that, hey, I'm the permanent starter on this D-line. So I'm going to go with him as my breakout candidate.
Yeah, I think those are both good answers. I think that Darnell Wright has already established himself, which is good to see, and you feel good about him. Dexter's changed his body too, from what we've seen. That is a good thing. The idea that he invited everyone down to Florida to work out, that's a good thing. I think you're right about Tyreek Stevenson. This is a great opportunity for him. I don't know how damaged he was with everything that happened. I don't know what his you know, wherewithal is, if he's going to turn that from a negative to a positive. That's difficult to do. But other than those three guys, to me, I think, believe it or not, Terrell Smith is in a better position to make the roster and make an impact and be a player than Zach Pickens, Roschon Johnson, Tyler Scott, or Noah Sewell. I think that Scott should have been able to do more, and we'll see if he can do much. Zach Pickens is hanging on by a thread, man. I mean, you know, it's just not good right now. Roschon, I worry about injury, worry about usage. I think he'll make the team, but I wonder if they're going to do anything. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Noah Sewell has the advantage of the coach knowing his brother. And if it wasn't for that, and they need someone like him to have a breakthrough, but I don't see it. I haven't seen it yet. I don't even have memories of him on special teams doing anything spectacular.
Nothing spectacular.
He doesn't play a lot. But I really believe, and I know that's weird, that Terrell Smith is a guy that is there, and if it's injury, if it's, you know, someone else failing, he can step in and might be a better player than he's been given credit for. But I think for the purpose of the question, my breakthrough guy is Dexter, just because we haven't seen it as consistently as I hope we see it this year. He's also going to be pushed because they signed some people and did some work to improve that.
Well, first question.
Who do you like hearing from regarding Bulls rookie Noah Essengay, Bulls Summer League coach Billy Donovan III, or teammate Matas Buzelis? Billy Donovan III said, quote, "With his versatility, he can set pick and rolls, he can play out on the perimeter, he can attack closeouts, and he can handle a little bit. As far as with him, he's got really good running ability, he covers ground extremely well," end quote. And Matas Buzelis said,
"Defensively, he's really good. Offensively, he's just going to get better. I mean, right now it's hard to tell. He's 18 years old. Yeah. So, what I look at when I see like prospects is how much they love the game, because if they love the game, they'll do anything it takes to figure out what they're missing, what they need to do to add to their game, and what to build. So, I see the love that he has. He's here early in the morning. I'm here always very early, and he's there too. So that shows a lot.
Are you looking forward to Friday night's Summer League opener?
You know, I got to tell you, this is insane. And we talked a little bit about it in transition yesterday because Grody said, I know you love the Summer League. I love the Summer League. I mean, I know that's insane, and I know I shouldn't. And there was a year where the Bulls won the Summer League, and I really thought that was going to translate, and it's never going to translate. But I get a huge kick out of it. I want to go to Vegas,
yeah,
and hit the Summer League. And, you know, I love the year where Malkovich was there because he grew up down the street from Doug Collins and their buddies from way back. I mean, and he's a Bulls fan as a result. I think that stuff's awesome. And I just want to go. Everyone's sitting there. They're relaxed. It's like going to the Senior Bowl or something. You can just pick up a lot of different things. Back in the day before they separated the media, you would get relationships with people. I remember going to the casino with a coach and having a really good time with this guy.
Yeah.
You know, you end up creating friendships and having fun. And I think the Summer League would be awesome for that. But I also, they're going to have Matas Muzelis. He's not going to play every game, but he's going to play some of these games. The idea of these two guys together running the floor, blocking shots, you know, wreaking some havoc, if you will. I'm all over that. I really think it's fun, and it gives you a chance to kind of enjoy the game just for the game and just kind of see great young athletes before you never see them again.
Yeah.
So I'm all over it. I don't know why. It's super weird, but I love the Summer League.
Mully, I'm with you. I love the Summer League. Like, we should make it should be a show trip. I hope Mitch takes us to Vegas.
Let's go.
I want to go with you. Like, I love the Summer League. I've been watching it all the time. I watched it last night. I mean, the Sox game was on, but I was watching, I think, OKC play against Philadelphia. I just love basketball. So when I was hearing Buzelis quotes, I'm excited to see those two play.
Because
I think, that's your future right there, right? Noah and Buzelis.
Yes.
So seeing them, I would say definitely watch this Friday's game if he's going to play right away. Because normally when you have these stars like Buzelis, they play the first two games and then they kind of like sit out and they're just done.
Friday's the game
you want to watch.
They're playing Toronto.
If you want to see these two go in action,
7 o'clock.
That would be the time you want to watch. I think it's on NBA TV during that time. So I definitely got my DVR set for that.
I do too.
I'm
so
excited.
Weird.
I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I'm happy Summer League is here. I'm excited to see what this team's going to do. So.
We are twisted. We're twisted.
Thank you both for your confessions. That's really nice to hear early in the morning. Also, Mully, in the first hour of the show, we have signed you up for two trips to Vegas.
Here we go.
One for the Summer League and one for the Bears game. Mully's going to be having a residency out there in Vegas
before we know it. Bankrupt.
I will tell you, I once pitched a story that never got accepted at my newspaper in North Carolina to spend a month in Vegas during the month of July to cover the basketball world because you have Summer League. You had the U.S. men's national team training there. You had recruiting bonanzas there. And it was the whole basketball world was there. And I thought, how awesome would it be to just make that a 2-3 week trip and do it? Didn't quite get there. That's an aside. I did practice last night saying Essengue about 10 times, trying to get that right, as we roll forward. I do think you hear from a lot of people that there's tools here, right? And the defensive versatility that you can imagine and envision with his length, with his bounce, with his athleticism. It's fun to think about. And so listening to Matas talk about it is fun.
What no one's saying is he can finish, but he can't score.
Right.
He's got some handle, which means he can run the break. So he can run the floor, and that's going to be fun to watch. But I don't think he can score for his life. I'm going to be really curious to see if he's got any kind of offensive tools, and I think that he may still be able to play in the NBA at 18 if you're 6'10 and you can run the floor and you can finish and block shots. And
there's some bounce to him, right?
Yes.
And like you can be a defender on the wing with your arms, you can be a defender at the rim because you've got that in your game, and it's gonna be fascinating. And as you say, I think ultimately he's got to polish up a jump shot at some point and figure out if he can add that to the game.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
How about ESPN listing the top 10 running backs in the NFL, including 5 honorable mentions, and then listing names under also receiving votes? Bears running back DeAndre Swift was mentioned in that area, officially being the 20th name listed. Does that sound about right? Is he good enough that the Bears don't need to add a guy, or should it be a priority?
So two parts to this question. Does it sound right that DeAndre Swift is the 20th running back listed on a list of top running backs in the NFL? It does, because when you go through the top 10, I mean, it is the elite of the elite. You've got Saquon, Derrick Henry, Jahmyr Gibbs, Bijan Robinson, Christian McCaffrey, Jacobs, Jonathan Taylor, James Cook, Joe Mixon, Alvin Kamara up there. So you understand what you're dealing with on the top shelf of running backs in this league and what you're looking for. Swift, I think, is in an interesting position because he is reunited with Ben Johnson, who in a lesser role got some stuff out of him the year that they were together with Ben calling plays in Detroit. And so he will also be working under the guidance of Eric Bieniemy, who is promising to get him a little bit sharper with the details of understanding where runs are designed to go and how DeAndre Swift needs to get them there. It's going to be really interesting to see how the Bears handle their running back situation. They've got, obviously, a draft pick in Kyle Manungai. They've got Swift as their lead back. You've got Roschon Johnson still around, as we talked about a couple minutes ago, and they got to find a role for him that works. I think what's most interesting here is that the time to add a running back to this roster was in the draft in April, and the Bears missed on all 3 days with targets that they had, whether it was an attempt to trade up for Ashton Jeanty, whether it was waiting for Trevian Henderson to fall in their lap, whether it was early on day three when there was still a bunch of guys available, and then they came off the board. I don't think they need to get desperate with the running back position. I think they missed their opportunity in April, and they just have to be okay with that.
Would you add one of these guys that is left on the free agent market?
What's left now? I feel like a few of these guys have come off the market in the last 6 or 7 weeks, and I would see what you got here in the preseason with this combination and then take it from there.
Dan, you're right. They had their chance to sign a running back. They had a chance to draft a running back. They failed on both of those opportunities to me. I mean, Swift being ranked 20th, I'm not shocked. I think he's right where he needs to be.
Yeah.
I think he had a tough season overall. Now, you're with Ben Johnson. I'm still worried about that, because even then with Ben Johnson, he had him for a year and then later say, you know what, let's trade
let's
this
upgrade.
Guy. Let's upgrade. You know, I think they could actually sign a running back. I could see them getting another old person who used to be with Ben Johnson, and that's Jamal Williams. I can see that. I think he like lead the NFL during Ben Johnson in touchdowns during that time.
They gave it
so I can see something like that, or unless they see one of these younger guys that can kind of fill in that role. I think Swift would be okay overall, but this is the position that you got to worry about the most if you're the Bears, right up there with edge rusher. The running back position on this offense is kind of troubling.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. You know, it is a pity that the draft didn't fall their way, or they didn't try to force it to fall their way. You know, when the two kids from Ohio State went off the board and they then kind of traded down, you were kind of like, oh, you know, they missed something there. I think that I'm not a big DeAndre Swift guy, but I think he's exactly where he should be. I think that's 20th out of 32 teams. That's about right. That's not really an insult or anything like that. Could he be better? Maybe. You talk about people pushing a guy and him, you know, reaching kind of a career point. Excuse me. So I think it's possible that they're okay at that position. I know that there's a lot of love being given to the rookie, the seventh rounder, who really should have been a fourth rounder.
Could have gone in the second round if you...
color me a little bit skeptical. I hate hearing stuff like that. There's a reason that people go where they go, and there is a size issue there that you're never going to get away with, get away from. And Roschon, you know, I don't know what to expect from him, and I don't know where he's at, and I would like them to, I think you're right, go through, see what's going on, see who's available, maybe add like a short yardage guy to give you like a little inside outside thing with Swift. I don't know, something like that might work.
Yeah, I mean, look, like the Roschon Johnson vision has not come into fruition through years one and two. No. And I think there's a sentiment within the front office up at Hallis Hall that they have kind of mismanaged the role, and that they've got to figure out how to do it with obviously a new coach who you would trust to find the right role for his backs. And now it's up to Ben Johnson to make that magic.
He's the huge addition, man. He's the game changer. A lot on his plate.
Sir.
Yeah. Expecting a lot from the guy. All right, we've got the extra point next. It's Mully and Haw with Dan Wiederer on Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
How about Jason Stark's story in The Athletic about the first half of the MLB season with speculation that Pittsburgh Pirates pitcher Paul Skeens could win the NL Cy Young Award despite a potential 8-13 record? Skeens is currently 4-7, and while everyone knows wins don't matter, could he really win over Zach Wheeler, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Logan Webb, or anyone else with gaudier statistics?
Yes. I know it's crazy to say, but this guy's an absolute monster. You think about the run support that he's getting, and it makes your jaw drop. I think the Pirates have scored two runs or less in five of his last six starts, right? You can't win baseball games like that, no matter how good your starting pitcher is. And Skeens, 4-7, 1.94 ERA. There's definitely a case to be made for Wheeler, for Yamamoto, for Webb. There's a lot of baseball left here in the second half of the season. But I'm not opposed to this, Mully. I really am not opposed to the idea of a guy getting that honor despite a record that is less than sparkling. I think, remember when Maddux won the Cy Young for an 84-loss Cubs team and they finished in fourth place? Yeah, he won 20 games that year. So it's a little bit of a different comp. But I do think your eye test tells you a little bit about who Paul Skeens is, and man, is it impressive.
Like you said, it happened before. So I'm not shocked. This doesn't surprise me too well. I know it's uncommon, but, I mean, Paul Skeens has that type of stuff. I mean, that's why he came in. That's why he's, like, dubbed pretty much, like, the best pitcher in MLB already before he even pitched his first game, as they was putting it. And he got the numbers to back it up. I mean, me personally, I like Zach Wheeler overall.
Yeah.
Right. But, I mean, if you look at this right now, look, he got a better ERA than Wheeler right now. I mean, it's just the record. It's just the Pirates are just not good right now. But it's not his fault at all. He's doing all he can. He just don't got no runs to, like, help him out.
It's crazy to think that, and I know wins don't matter. I've watched baseball change, and I understand the statistics behind the game. It's just that back in the day, you needed like 28 wins or something. Yeah. You needed to be like the winningest pitcher. It always felt like the guy that, and again, that changed. King Felix had like a 14-13 record 1 year and won the Cy Young. And that was a good example of a guy that pitched his rear end off but played on an awful team and didn't get any run support. So I kind of like the idea that it could happen. There's part of me that wants to see it happen so that it changes the way we look at this once and for all. But, like, the idea of a guy not even getting to 10 wins and winning the Cy Young is a form of madness. But – you know, I think it's going to be Wheeler. I do.
Yeah.
But that's just right now. And you never know. There's a lot of time. There's 60-something games left. And you could see people get injured, go off the boil. There's just so many weird things that can happen. Somebody could catch fire that we're not talking about right now but is close with their statistics and could kind of run away with the thing before it's all said and done. But, I mean, Paul Skeens is kind of must-watch television. He's the kind of guy, if he's going to pitch, you just want to be sitting there watching
it.
He's that good. So I think that I just love the idea of it. I think it's so sensational that something like that could happen. It would just change the way we look at the game.
The dude is so imposing. If you follow baseball gambling lines, typically when you've got a ace with that kind of stuff, they're like minus 260 every time or higher every time they take the bump, and the Pirates are underdogs in a lot of Paul Skeens' starts, and it like defies logic. Your brain doesn't compute it. You're like, wait a second, what? Like you've got maybe the best pitcher in baseball going to the hill and you're an underdog in most of your games. Hard to fathom, but certainly the stuff is there, the presence is there, and we'll see what he does the back half of the year.
The old gambling term is the trend is your friend. If they're only scoring two runs every time he pitches, you're not going to, you know, unless you can go nine and shut him out, you're going to have a hard time winning. That's just the reality of it. But God bless them. It's fun to see. And I hope it happens. I think it'd be a scream. All right, we've got your phone calls coming, 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw. We've got Dan Wiederer from the Tribune here this morning on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Listen to the Mully and Haw Show on the Odyssey and iHeartRadio apps.
Two outs in the ninth, the 2-2. Takes this one hard to left field. Obrafito backing up, and he makes the grab at the track. A loud out to end the ball game, but the Sox will lose the opener against the Blue Jays 8-4.
Mully and Haw, we've got Dan Wiederer in this morning, and the live game last night was the White Sox coming home, playing a team they had won a series from in Toronto and losing yet again to Berrios. Jose Berrios is now, I think it's 16-6 against the White Sox.
You don't like seeing him, do you?
Oh my God, that guy's a nightmare. He has more wins against the White Sox than any other team. I think he's got 10 wins over Baltimore. So he has significantly, now wins don't matter, but I'll tell you what, they really leave you a little shaken if you watch one guy beat you repeatedly.
Over and over and over again.
And he doesn't seem to have any issue, and he pitched a great game.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get to him. The young guys came through at one point, and they scored a run, which was great to see. It seemed like there might have been an error involved in that. There was a bad fielding play, but what are you going to do? Sox score a run. So it was great to see him take a lead, but man, that's the ninth straight win.
Yeah.
For Toronto, who are now 3.5 games up over the Yankees. The Yankees, I don't know, they were 7 games up at one point.
Just falling off, right?
Crazy.
White Sox
crazy
offense didn't get going until late in that game, and obviously they ran into some trouble in the sixth with that 5-run inning. And look, like this is that time of year where teams have to start making a move. You mentioned that AL East. It's a fascinating division watching that thing kind of unfold the way it has.
How is Tampa even involved in this? They're only 4 games back. The Yankees 3.5. Yeah, Baltimore, the most disappointing team in baseball. They are like, I don't know, 9 games back, something like that. They've disappeared. That was a really good young team that you thought was going to be good for a while, and that's gone to HE double hockey sticks.
Our good buddy Rich Campbell is a diehard Baltimore Orioles fan. So if you'd want to get some takes on what's happened with the Orioles season, you just give him a call and let him do his therapy session live on the air, and you'll get some good takes.
Why didn't they get involved in the Crochet deal? I mean, why didn't they, like, that's what they needed. They needed a pitcher. They needed someone like that. They just didn't want to give up the prospects it would have taken. And, you know, the Sox did pretty good in that trade with the Red Sox. But Crochet's an all-star. I mean, you're going to see him. He's as good as anybody in baseball. The Red Sox troubles have not been at his doorstep.
The Red Sox will be at Wrigley after the All-Star break, so that'll be fun to see. I don't know if he will line up to pitch in that series, but it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
The Cubs, you know, again, they start tonight in Minnesota. That's a bad team that isn't playing well, and this seems like a good opportunity for them. They've got 6 games before the All-Star break, and you would like to see them continue what they've been doing. They've won 5 of 6 after kind of a bad series. Then they came back, and you know, watching the way that they dominated St. Louis was so much fun because it's St. Louis. And they had one bad inning. Otherwise, they could have swept that series and really kind of put them out of consideration. But they're still well ahead of them, and you know, the Brewers won last night. They won 9-1 against the Dodgers.
Yeah,
what's going on with the Dodgers? But that's good to see.
I think you said yesterday about that Cubs St. Louis series that it was a bit of a psyche series, right? Like it wasn't just winning 2 out of 3. It was really putting some doubt in Cardinals' brains. You know, you hit the eight homers on Friday, eight you come back and you score 11 more on Sunday on a, you know, big stage, bright lights game on ESPN. And you really just played really well in a way that asserted your dominance, even though it was just a 2-1 series win. You felt like the Cubs were in control of that series for the most part and doing some really fun things. I think what's fascinating here in the short term is what happens with the ripple effect of the tie-on injury and how they kind of manage things, you know, short term and figure out how to cross that bridge. They've done a good job of weathering some setbacks to the starting pitching this year, but you've got to do it again in a way that is going to challenge you to kind of keep the bullpen where it needs to be kept.
The Shota on the bump today for the Cubbies, that is a big deal, and that's their best pitcher. And let's hope he's up to it. I'm sure he will be.
Yeah. And on the road, you Minnesota, and then you go to Yankee Stadium That's for the it. Weekend and, yeah. and then right into the break.
Keep it up, Yankees. Keep losing. All right. We'll be right back. It's 312-644-6767. We have Dan Weider here. It is Mully and Haw on the score.